This is Will's Band of the Week for September 1st, 2019. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with David from the, what is it, the Brooklyn Satellite Studio?
Brooklyn Satellite Studio, yes, in an undisclosed location in the Rocky Mountains.
So the Brooklyn Bureau has sub-bureaus. Just, I guess, one.
Well, you know, basically, you know, we have a bunker in case of, you know, zombie apocalypse, nuclear war, whatever. There, you know, we have a safe place here underground.
In case Donald Trump gets reelected, right? You can
absolutely.
You want to make sure you're there the Wednesday following the 2020 election.
The risk levels are just going up and up and up at this point.
Yeah,
but here we are.
Yeah, we're here.
We're entering the second decade.
Right.
The
second decade, and yeah, I actually kind of thought, should we even do one because we bombarded the listeners with a 2.5 hour podcast. It's kind of like, I don't know. I hope it doesn't lose us listeners because people would just, it'll be like, way too self-indulgent, people are probably thinking. But they don't even care enough to say that. So that's fine. We're cool with that.
Well, I was thinking that you might not be able to work on a podcast because just, you know, the congratulatory emails and Facebook messages and Instagram comments and everything coming in, you know, just dealing with all that.
Yeah, the congratulations
might be hard.
It takes several hours a day just to read through all of them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We did
and
get...
Now that all the summer interns in the office have gone back to school, you got to do it all by yourself.
Right. And I have mixed feelings about that too, though, because, you know, what if I assign them to, you know, to kind of go through everything, and what if they were to kind of edit out something that I wanted to see? So it's a little tricky to trust somebody else with this important job.
You want all that to come straight to you. It's true, unfiltered. You never know. There might be some congratulatory message from, like, you know, Robert Smith, and they look at it and they say, I don't know who this is.
Yeah.
You know, that's a normal name. You know, everybody, that's just a common name, and it turns out to be the Robert Smith, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good example of what could happen. Okay, we did get a legitimate mailbag item, so I guess that means we should probably play the jingle.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4.
It's time for the
mailbag.
Mailbag.
So, you know, the problem with, you know, everybody who emails us joins the podcast as a correspondent. So then there's nobody left to email us. So, but now...
Yes, we have to develop new emailers all the time.
That's right. But Greg, is he from New Hampshire? Am I remembering that right?
I think so.
Greg has emailed us a few times, and he sent us a very nice congratulations for the 10 years. He said, my first email to you was March 2013, but I found the show in 2010 while looking for reviews on a record I was into at the time. I don't remember what it was, but if I went through the band's archives, I could figure it out. But he didn't do his music journalism, so I guess he, you know, that's okay. That's kind of like what we do, not do our music journalism. He says, what hooked me was the banter, good music, but mostly the ridiculous 38 special references. Ridiculous? Come on. That's kind of disrespectful, I think, of 38 special.
Means we have to keep them up.
How about a little reverence? Come on. And then he says, if I hadn't admitted to being a Grateful Dead fan, I'd probably be the New England correspondent. No, I think Barrett was very, you know, he was open to you know, accepting the Grateful Dead fandom. I kind of like...
I don't see why not.
No, I mean, I'm kind of...
I have the feeling Jeremiah is actually, you know, he has a certain jam band affinity that would probably...
Right, yeah, there. You'd think. You know, I don't... I'm a lot more kind of open-minded and accepting of the whole Grateful Dead thing, more than I used to be. When I was young, you know, I didn't get it at all, and so I'm like, oh, God, that's terrible. And I still don't really... It feels like this big club that I'm not invited to, kind of, you know, because it's like this big following and I don't really get it, really. But I think it's just cool if anybody can, you know, be that much into any music.
I don't think it's so much that you're not invited. It's that if you wanted to join, there'd be so much homework that you'd have to do at this point.
Right. Yeah.
That's the problem. You know, you have to go back and figure out that 1982 concert in Worcester, Massachusetts is the one that, you know, where they really nailed it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the one 3 days later in, I don't know, in Ohio. You know, that's the level that most people, I think, in that community are at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, it takes a lot of study.
Were they kind of the original band where people would record the shows and then they would, you know, refer to them as bootlegs, right? That's probably not a term people know anymore, right? Bootlegs?
I think you're right.
I mean, that used to be
I think the reason they were the first or the first major one is because they opened the gate. They said, you know, record what you want.
Oh, right, right. They didn't care.
No copyright concerns.
They encouraged it. Right, right.
Yeah.
So for all the young listeners, we have so many young listeners, I'm sure. So the bootleg is when you record a live show and then... You, of course, are violating the copyright and you're selling the tapes or distributing them, you know, to all your friends or whatever. So there's probably a lot of Springsteen bootlegs, right?
I'm sure.
Some giant arena in New Jersey, 1976 classic Springsteen show. That's the one where he came out and did whatever song on the encore or whatever.
Right.
Did you ever see a live Springsteen show?
No.
Me either. But people would always talk about how... This is probably a story I've told before. We were talking about how we repeat ourselves now, but whatever. You know, they talk about him doing a 3-hour show. Don't you just think you're like 2 hours into it and you're like, this is enough now? Could he really sustain the intensity and the passion, you know, for that long? I'm just not sure.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Okay.
I have not seen a Springsteen show, but I have to admit, I have seen a Grateful Dead show.
You have?
Once.
You saw one Grateful Dead show?
One in my life, yeah.
And you didn't follow them all over the country as a result?
No, I didn't hate it. I mean, I listened to them at the time, but I did not become a member of the cult.
What was your impression of it?
It was great, as I recall.
You enjoyed it?
So long ago that I... Oh, yeah, definitely.
Huh? Well, that's pretty cool.
But I actually have zero memory, except for venue and... That's about it. I remember what the venue was.
Yeah, because you were 8 years old, right?
Yeah, I was about the same. Greek Theater, Berkeley, California.
All right.
Nice small venue, too. Not some arena, you know? Like a couple thousand people, max.
You know, we talk about venues all the time. And
yes, we do.
I think Jeremiah recently brought up Red Rocks. I assume that you've been to Red Rocks.
I have not. I've been past it many times, but I have not actually been there.
I've been there.
He's been there. You've been there.
I saw Jack White at Red Rocks about 8 years ago, maybe. I don't know. Something like that. It's a cool venue. You know, it's just iconic, right?
It looks so cool.
So another venue that it just seems like you should see somebody there just to add to your resume is to see somebody at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
Seems like that's something that should happen, but I don't know. I don't know if it will.
Yeah, that's a nice, it looks like a nice, cozy kind of, it's not small, but it's...
But it's not contained. Crazy it's huge contained. Either.
Yeah.
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 Right.
Well, since I've never been to LA, I can't claim that I've ever been to the Hollywood Bowl. That would be impossible.
Well, that's interesting, because you know what? I have not ever been to LA either.
Really?
We're just not LA people, I guess. Yeah, I've never been to LA. And I haven't traveled, like, God, we've been talking to Jeremiah recently. It's like he's been, like,
Yes.
Jeremiah and Craig both. So, like, they've traveled the world over. But I've traveled a fair amount in the United States, at least. And, yeah, just never L.A. So, I don't know. I keep saying my son, Reese, would be interested in going there. So, I told him, like, he and I can go there because the rest of the family doesn't want to go there. So, someday.
Someday.
I can hear the wind in the bunker now. You got a little wind.
That may be somewhere else because it didn't actually pick up. I don't know.
Well, it's calmed down now.
Something was interrupting now. It's probably the NSA listening in.
That's probably right. They heard so,
when they get on the line, you know, it kind of you lose it a little bit.
Well, they're constantly monitoring everything, and so when the word Trump comes on, if you say that word, suddenly like this red light goes on. And then they're monitoring everything then, I think.
Yeah, then the bandwidth goes down considerably.
Right, you know, that's right. Yeah.
It's all going to Langley instead of to Madison.
So I don't have any live reports. Do you have any?
No.
No live reports.
No, I have no live reports, but I do have live ticket buying reports.
Okay. And you want to say what you're excited about?
I think I should keep it, you know. Keep it on the down low for the moment. Let the listeners speculate.
Yeah,
but I do have tickets to four concerts.
I have tickets to three months. Oh, that's pretty good. I've got tickets to two, one September, one October, both of which I'm really excited about. So that's going to be fun, and a couple more that are possibilities. So even though we have a Madison in particular is suffering since the frequency disappeared. There's a lot of bands that I was looking at a couple of labels. Labels that we tend to see bands on, so they're familiar names. So uh-huh. I went to two of these sites, and each of them had like maybe six or eight bands touring that were bands that I've heard of. And they're all just skipping. They're skipping Wisconsin entirely. They're just going to Chicago, Minneapolis, you know. So I think we're getting disrespected.
Is there anyone in particular that you want to call out for
no.
disrespect?
No. I won't call anybody out right
anyone
now.
Anyone you really wanted to hear and you're like, no.
Actually, I think someone who is coming to Madison, though, is somebody we're going to talk about. So that's a good transition. Jay Somm is going to come here and play.
Okay.
So that
and where
means,
is that?
I think she's playing at the High Noon, which is our kind of mid-size, like 400 capacity venue. Pretty good place. I'll give you a little High Noon trivia. Want to hear some High Noon trivia? It's mm-hmm. where I met Chris, I'm pretty sure. When Barrett and Chris and I went to see The National, who I later found out Chris didn't like. But it was in 2007 in the on the tour for, I think it was the Boxer album.
Mm-hmm.
Which was great. That's great personally album. When I thought like The National was really great. Mm-hmm. It was either the first time I ever met Chris or one of the first times at the High Noon. So, and it's maybe the venue where I've seen more. I don't know how many bands I've seen. I've probably been to at least like 30 shows there. So, yeah, I should keep track.
It's kind of like when Lennon met McCartney. When was that?
It was kind of like that. Yeah. Who knew that podcasting history would ensue, right?
Right.
I better look this up and make sure I'm right. So hold on. Yes, Jay Somm is playing at the High Noon October 17th with openers Gia Margaret and Boy Scouts. So there's some openers we can
either.
Some bands we can learn about. So, okay, Jay Somm, the new album.
Right.
The new album is called Anak Ko, and I didn't know what that
right.
meant.
So little music journalism here.
Yeah.
Jay Somm's real last name is Duterte.
Right.
A name she shares, unfortunately for her, with a rather famous person at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Which suggests that I guess she is at least partly Filipino in ancestry.
I think that's right.
And I think that the title of the record also, and some of the material on the record relates to that, at least that one song, Anak Ko. And that's when my music journalism ends. But she is talking to some extent about her grandparents going back. at least in that song. And this is the second album.
I think right? There might have been a one before. I mean, there's the second, it's the second one that any of us have ever heard of. But when I looked it up, It had it listed three of them. So maybe just nobody ever heard of the first one. So they're counting this as the second one. So, yeah.
She's toured a lot. I mean, I know I've seen that name many times on bills with people that, you know, either people I know opened for her or she opened for them. But somehow I've never actually given her the proper attention until now.
Well, I'll have more to say about that, but we'll play some music first. It's funny because I was trying to decide on a track, and my top two picks, I said to myself, they're kind of outliers. But then I thought, maybe kind of the whole album is sort of outliers in a good way, in that it's really not all the same, you know? So that's cool. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm probably a little bit predictable. You're probably thinking, I know which track he's going to pick. Yeah. He's going to pick number two.
Track seven or two.
Number two, Superbike.
Oh, yeah.
J-Som. So that's, I guess you'd call that kind of shoegazy, right? And it's really the
I looked up the title. Anako means my child in Tagalog.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I read somewhere that that was what her grandmother used to call her. So that's why the record is called Anako.
Oh, that's cool. That's good.
It's shoegazy. You were saying that it's not all the same, and it's not, but there's something similar, which is that the voice is kind of buried a little bit in the instrumentation, and gradually as each song goes along, it's kind of like, you know, the guitars move up and everything moves up, and it kind of almost, you know, buries the vocal and then just goes on by itself to a climax.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I hear that happening in a lot of the songs.
Yeah,
I'm not complaining.
I wouldn't say that it buries it, but it definitely doesn't. It's not like the vocals are all totally out front, right? And there's a I think she's a very good I don't know if the right word is producer, but I think she's pretty much responsible for the how the whole thing sounds. It's self-produced, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I read that she's got some like producing jobs, you know, for other bands, and you can tell she's got a talent for it. But the reason I said that was an outlier is because there's not really anything else on this album where you'd listen to it and say, well, it's kind of shoegazy, right? It's just that kind of wall of guitars is kind of unique to that song.
Right.
So here's a little bio. Her name is Melina Duterte, and she grew up outside of Oakland, California, of course, and recently moved to Los Angeles for indie rock stardom.
For indie rock stardom.
And she's good friends, I believe, with Sasami Ashworth, who we've kind of become a fan of since South by Southwest. There, South by Southwest reference. Had to throw that in there.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, you were mentioning she's toured a lot. So I've seen her twice opening up for other acts.
Oh.
I saw her open for Japanese Breakfast in Portland. And at the time, I thought, this is really pretty unremarkable. It's pretty kind of just straightforward rock, and I'm not really finding anything very captivating about it. Then I saw her again with Barrett when we saw Mitski. She opened for Mitski, and I thought, it's still kind of standard rock, but it's sounds really good, so I liked it a lot more than the first time I saw her. And now listening to this album, I like it more. So I think she, I don't know if it's just my perception, but I think she's getting better. Like her, I don't know, her whole presentation is more interesting. She's maybe branching out a little bit. So
yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Mitski because I am reminded of Mitski a lot on this record. Just that kind of moodiness and the kind of instrumentation. It's just it's Mitski like.
Sure, reasonable comparison. So you get to make a pick now.
With the whole record, though, I started looking at like what was my favorite, and I thought, well, really the whole second half of the record, straight through, is great. And then I started looking at the first couple of songs, and I thought, oh, well, yeah, number two, which you just played, that's also good. That's also great. So there's really almost nothing on here that isn't great. So I'm going to go with number five, Nighttime Drive. That was the first one that hooked me.
Yep.
Yeah. You cut off just at the point where it takes off, sort of into the stratosphere. It's great.
The listeners will have to listen on their own then, won't they? We left them wanting more.
Yes.
Hopefully.
But that's what a lot of the songs on here do.
Yeah.
They hook you in, and then at a certain point it's like, okay, now we're really going for a climax, and they take off. It's really nice.
It is interesting, isn't it, how a lot of the music that we listen to, if you listen to the first 2 minutes, you're going to get the gist of the song, and then the chorus will repeat a couple more times. There'll be some kind of end part. But some of the really good albums, something kind of different happens at the 3 minute mark or something, and that's one sign, I think, of a really, really good songwriter. Like, here's an example, like the Black Belt Eagle Scout album that we loved, right?
Yeah.
A whole bunch of the songs on that album, like, something happens late mm-hmm. in the song. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of them, like, the right. drums don't come in until late, and
right.
it's cool. So
she leads you in suspense up to a certain point.
So all of you young indie rocker songwriters, we just gave them another tip, right? They should probably listen to our tips, don't you think?
Absolutely. You just reminded me that... Black Belt has a new album coming out. I believe it's today or tomorrow.
It's really soon.
We haven't heard at all.
Yeah, it's probably Friday, which when this podcast comes out means last Friday. So it'll be out by the time this podcast is out. So yeah, I'm interested to listen to that. So hopefully it will be good.
Now, what is your second pick?
Well, I told you that I was going to go for another outlier. So this is one that features the, is it a lap steel or a pedal steel, or are they the same thing? Because like a lap steel means it's on your lap, right? And the pedal means that you have a pedal. So they would be the same thing then, right?
Not necessarily.
I'm not sure.
I think they're close.
And then we were just talking about this recently, that you can't always tell if it's just somebody just playing with one of those slides, right? But I was reading that this is actually I believe, lap steel. So, but it sounds really cool, and it's like a traditionally kind of a country music instrument, right? But in this song, it's more of like a mood thing, which is super cool. So, yeah, it's the last one, Get Well.
Oh, yeah. Another deceptive one where you, at the point where we faded out, it's just loping along, little guitar and bass, but there's more coming.
Yep.
If you let it run. I like it.
I should also point out that the bass is great in that. You know, the lap steel is great, but that song without that bass line would be not, it just wouldn't be the same. So
yeah.
Yeah. Let's shout out to the bass player once again.
And that may just be her. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to know because One place I read they just called it a bedroom project, so she may have played like most of the instruments, but I know she's got some guest musicians on this too. But it's not clear like who's playing where. There's actually a member of Chastity Belt who plays on this. I believe her name is Annie Truscott. She's the, I think, bass player for Chastity Belt. Now, if you can have a connection with Chastity Belt, that makes you cool, as far as I'm concerned.
Correct.
So, yeah, definitely liking this album, and I am positive on it. It is getting a positive review from me.
I would second that, but I would push it a little higher on my scale. It's in contention for top 10.
I'm saying it's in the upper echelon, but I'm not sure how high the echelon is going to be yet. But I do not disagree with you for it being a contender. So very cool, Jay Somm, and I'm pretty sure that if I'm in town, I'm going to go to that show. That is going to be cool. I think Barrett has previously spoken highly of Jay Somm. I have not heard what he thinks about this album, but he'll probably like it. So, Barrett, if you're listening, we should go to that show, right? Chris, I don't know what Chris thinks about Jay Somm, but why would he not like this, right?
Sounds like something he could like, yes, definitely.
So anyway, yeah.
It's not the National, so, you know.
Right. It's not...
And it's not Black MIDI.
Chris is listening, thinking, if only Matt Berninger were doing the vocals on this, then I'd love it, right? All right. Should we move on then?
Okay.
So we have another one. This is is this under the radar or not? I don't know. Not a whole lot of people have been talking about this, but I ran across this album by Petite League, and I thought, you know, it's kind of good. And they did a... I start to get these mixed up now. It used to always be the best live videos you could find were the KEXP videos, right? But now some bands do the Audio Tree ones, and they're kind of the same thing, right? They're just both high-quality studio live videos. So
sometimes
then
the Audio Tree ones have a little bit too much inter-song banter.
Oh, do you think so?
They go on and on about... Well, yeah, I mean, I've watched a few where they go on and on about what do you guys... What kind of candy do you guys eat on the road and that kind of... You know, like...
Yeah.
Okay, enough. Yeah. Can we get back to the... But, you know, you can always fast forward to the next song.
Yeah, and I don't often watch them all beginning to end. I kind of watch bits of them just to get a feel for what the band is like. And I have noticed that the KEXP, they're usually pretty brief. They do like 2 or 3 minutes in the middle. Yeah. Well, there's either a KEXP or a an Audio Tree of Petite League.
Oh,
and and also one of the videos you get if you search them on YouTube is they're playing at the Ratskeller. Do you know what the Ratskeller is?
No. Madison?
Yes, it is in Madison. We need to educate the listeners, not that they care, or not that they should. the student union in Madison, the room where the bands play, which is decorated like an old German beer hall, is called the Ratskeller. So there's actually a Petite League video from them playing there in the fall of 2017. It's like a year and a half ago. They're trying to play Madison for indie rock stardom, but that, you know, they decided to go back to Brooklyn.
Well, here's the backstory though, which may be why it makes sense that they were in the student hangout in Madison, which is that they formed at Syracuse University, right?
I think I saw that. Yep.
Yeah, and I think they put out their first album when they were still two of the guys, I guess. They were seniors at Syracuse, living in a house, kind of a not particularly well groomed establishment, which was called the Scarier Dome.
That's
which is a play, if you know the Syracuse sports deal. It's a play on the Carrier Dome, right?
Right. Yep.
It's called the Scarier Dome. So they formed in that house, and they put out one record, and I get maybe two records. I don't know. This is either the second or the third. But yeah, and then they moved to Brooklyn. You can't achieve indie rock stardom in Syracuse.
You wouldn't think so. Yeah.
No.
You'd think they would have called their band Scarier Dome, right? That seems like an obvious band name. But Petite League is okay too. Yeah. Now we've got minor leagues. No, major leagues. There's no band called Minor Leagues that we know of. There's Major Leagues and Petite League.
Right.
Yeah.
This is Australia, and Petite Leagues is Brooklyn by way of Syracuse.
Right. Exactly. So the album is called Rattler. And, well, one thing that's notable about it is the way it's recorded. But we can talk about that a little bit more. But do you want to take the first pick on this one?
No. You can go ahead.
Okay, well, if you're going to have me make the first pick, I won't say it's an outlier, but one of the kind of slower ones, pretty much kind of up-tempo power poppy, right? One of the little slower ones I like a lot, so I'm going to pick that one. Number three, Hang the Cowboy.
So Barrett is not here to play the game of who do they sound like. So, but I do have a thought. Do they sound like anyone to you?
I can't think of it. It's probably going to make sense when you tell me.
Well, I don't know what it is that they do to the voice, that distortion on the voice that makes it sound like, you know, he's singing from like inside a pipe inside someone's bathroom or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it reminds me a lot, and that and the just the overall sound reminds me a lot of Superchunk, early Superchunk.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because they had that kind of high, whiny, distorted.
Right? Yeah.
Right? Vocal.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good comparison. I hadn't thought of it. Yeah, isn't it interesting how they recorded it? I mean, it's clearly, I think it's kind of lo-fi on purpose, and clearly with the vocals, that they just decided to just mess with them. The whole album, the vocals sound like that.
Yeah. There's not an undistorted vocal, I don't think.
And I wonder if, like, for me, I don't think that. I think it is interesting and kind of fun. It makes me wonder if it is an impediment to like bigger success, because I'm not sure that like bigger audiences go for lo-fi style recordings. But who knows? So I kind of admire them for taking the risk.
We'll find out, won't we?
I guess we will.
I mean, now that they've, you know, vaulted into the big time, gotten on the podcast.
Right. Yep.
Moved to Brooklyn. Made all the right moves.
I suppose it's time for you to have a barbecue now with the Petite League.
That could be. That could happen.
Uh-huh. So it's time for you to make a pick now.
Okay. Well, I know you're always in favor of number seven, so let's try number seven.
I have to count to figure out which one that is.
Oh, it's LimeWire Virus.
LimeWire Virus.
Yeah, a callback to the 90s or early 00s there.
That's Petite League. The album is called Rattler, and it's 10 songs, 27 and a half minutes. Pretty good length, I think.
Yeah, compact.
And pretty consistent,
makes
too.
Makes an impression.
Yeah.
And then it's over.
I think you get when, one thing I could say about this and J-Som is that they both have pretty good second halves. And when you can maintain your album for the second half, that's a really good sign. So I could go with the pop hit. I could go with the droney drum machine track. I could go with a deep late album cut. What do you think?
Ooh, deep late album cut, definitely.
Should we do that?
Yeah.
The one right after LimeWire Virus, number 8, is good. It's called Blood Gardens.
Composure, whatever helps the grass grow higher.
Petite League. Yeah, that was a little bit different, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Had a little more, I don't know, intricate instrumentation, not just pure power pop. So I think it's a solid album.
Definitely.
I was trying to find some reviews of this. You know who really loved it? The, I think they're London-based, a site called The Line of Best Fit. Have you ever read that one?
English. I don't know if it's London. Yeah, it's definitely English. Yeah.
Yeah, they gave it an 8.5. They absolutely loved it.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's interesting because some, here's some, this is great. Like, I don't know if I read this before. So here are some, the name dropping. It says, recalling the Strokes' angular guitar precision and the jaunty vocal harmonies of Tokyo Police Club, White Knuckle Wildflower reliably justifies its title. A jagged highlight, of course we didn't play it, that heralds an unhindered state of liberation. And then they quote it. And then there's another in the song LimeWire Virus. It says, it finds the outfit without becoming truly derivative, skewing between The Replacements and Yola Tango for inspiration. Kind of interesting, right? Like comparisons people come up with.
Yeah, I don't know if I heard any Replacements in there, but I guess I'll have to go back and listen to it again.
I didn't really, but I can't really say it's really off base either. So anyway, pretty cool, but interesting album. It's not like everywhere. It's not like everybody's talking about it, but now we are. So that's cool, right?
That's correct. So they're on the cusp. They're right there.
Right. Petite League, check them out. They must be playing like within a block of you at some point in the near future.
Probably at some point before the end of the year. That's true. That's true.
Now, what would be interesting would be when they play live, are they going to put his voice through some distortion machine?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. What does a voice sound like?
Yeah, or will it just be the guy singing and it'll be just a little bit different? I don't know. It was kind of that way with the early... And it was actually kind of a fascinating thing, I thought, about some of the early super messy lo-fi Guided by Voices albums. And they would sound, you know, you'd listen to the recording and you'd be like, you know, this is like, I have no idea what this is going to sound like live. And then when they played live, they just rocked out. You know, there was no more lo-fi. So it was kind of cool because it's fun to hear the contrast between the, you know, the super lo-fi recording with all the crazy stuff in it, and then when they'd play live, they just, you know, it's just rock and roll. So I don't know, maybe Petite League would do that too. I'm not sure. Yeah. So yeah. All right. I'm gonna declare us two for two.
Two for two.
And greater than $0. We'll I'm declaring
save
that
all
too.
We'll save all the other bands, all the that have been, you know, knocking on the door and trying to get on. We'll save them for another day, right?
I have about
You have that stack of
easily half a dozen, and then you just mentioned three more to me before we started recording.
Right.
So to add those to the pile. So yeah, pretty cool. Very good. So all right. Anything else? Are we gonna let the listeners have a break and not
I think the listeners need a break.
Yeah, they definitely need a break.
Get an under an hour podcast if we can give it to them. I don't know.
It's gonna be a relief. A collective sigh by the listeners. Okay.
Absolutely.
Everybody, be cool, and we'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia. You can subscribe or download the podcast wherever podcasts are available, or from our website, willsband.net. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.